evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. This program is recorded via remote and here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, May 13, 2020. Three people were killed in a rural ambush by unknown gunmen.
The soldiers became also part of the victims.
And some suspected COVID-19 patients in South Sudan say they are not receiving treatment.
The same thing for that. If you are taken there, you will be first. Your blood will be first taken for screening. They have to check. If there are some other diseases, they can be treated. They call it as a supportive treatment. When I came here, nothing like that.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Three people were killed and six others wounded in a road ambush by a group of armed men at Lanya area in Yei County. A member of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan in Lanya says the wounded and bodies of the deceased were transported to Yei Civil Hospital on Tuesday. Lasuba Memo reports for VOA from Juba.
Raphael Rufus, a bishop-elect for the Lanya Diocese of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, says the travelers fell into an ambush shortly before reaching Loka on the Lanya Yei Road. Several travelers were wounded during the attack. Upon hearing about the ambush, soldiers with the South Sudan People's Defense Force in Loka decided to escort the truck on its trip to Yei, said Bishop Rufus. But before reaching the town, he says the vehicles fell into a second ambush.
As the soldiers were trying to escort, also the Mankaro, it fell into the same ambush. That was where the soldiers became also part of the victims. I learned that there were three actually who were injured. But then, as they were on the way to Yei, they eventually passed on. And there were some other six injured.
Bishop Rufus says the three who died, two women and a man, were wounded in the first ambush. Major General Yuasa Lujankamba, the former police commissioner for the now defunct Yei River State, says the travelers were in his lorry truck. He says one of the victims in the attack was a policeman.
The other one is a policeman. He was a policeman now. And you know how he deserted the work, and it was actually appeared when he was wounded. When he was murdered, then we actually came to know that is our own police. It's called Emmanuel. Yeah, it's very, very unfortunate. Yeah.
72-year-old Yei resident Christian Lumori says a policeman who was killed was his nephew. He's speaking in Arabic. Lumori said he learned about the ambush from his sister when he was about to visit someone at Yei Civil Hospital.
I was going hangout and did not know what was going on when one of my sisters asked me where I was going. And I told her, I'm going to visit someone at the hospital. She told me, are you still focused on that? Your sister's son was shot on the road and his body is at the mortuary. And in fact, I went there and found three people dead. It was really something terrible.
A police officer in Lanya who spoke to VOA on condition of anonymity, since he is not authorized to speak to the media, confirms the attacks took place yesterday morning. He says the first ambush occurred between Loliu and Mutu, and the second group of armed men attacked the same truck between Limbe and Koya. The officer says National Salvation Front rebels led by Thomas Cirillo carried out the attacks but did not explain how he knew the perpetrators were NAS rebels. Major General Lul Rai Kwong, a spokesperson for the South Sudan People's Defense Force, also blamed NAS rebels for the attacks.
Our intelligence have indicated that all these three separate attacks were launched on these civilian vehicles by forces loyal to Thomas Cirillo. And we have got intelligence, reliable intelligence reports, that he ordered his forces to cause maximum harm on anybody that is using the road. It looks like he's trying to cut off the traffic flow between our state as well as the smaller town.
A few weeks ago, the NAS warned people not to travel on the Juba Yei Road. National Salvation Front spokesperson Samuel Soba says his group issued the warning at a time when the rebels and government forces were fighting in the area, and denies his group had anything to do with yesterday's attacks.
What I know is that there is a war going on in that area. When you talk of Lanya, Kenya Loka, and even Afrika Gwada, all these places is insecure at the moment. There is fighting going on. So anything can happen there anytime. Nobody will be held accountable because we have said the roads are not okay. There is operation on the roads, so people should not move. Nobody should be made account here because we have met the explanation clear. The serious operation going on in this area, so people should not move. Civilians should not move from this.
2 days ago, suspected NAS rebels carried out a road ambush at Koda on the Juba-Mondri Road, in which one person was killed, according to eyewitnesses. For VOA News, I am Nasuba Memo in Juba.
Some COVID-19 patients isolated at Dr. John Garang Center for Infectious Disease Unit are complaining about what they called a negligence by doctors. One patient says he is yet to receive any medicine since he was brought to the isolation center 1 week ago. The undersecretary at South Sudan's Ministry of Health, Dr. Makur Mathur, says COVID-19 patients will be released if their test results are negative. Ding Magod reports for VOA from Juba.
A 31-year-old patient who we are calling Peter instead of his real name because of the stigma attached to COVID-19 patients says he has been at the isolation center since April 23rd but has yet to receive any treatment.
They tell people that if you are taken there, you will be first, your blood will be first taken for screening. They have to check. If there are some other diseases, they can be treated. They call it as a supportive treatment. When I came here, nothing like that. Nothing, there is no any supportive treatment here.
Dr. Makur Mathur, undersecretary in South Sudan's health ministry, denies any negligence on the part of the staff at the John Garang Infectious Disease Unit. Noting doctors and nurses live at the compound with patients, but says health ministry's officials will ask medical personnel to be more responsive to patients.
Well, I don't have to comment on individual cases, but definitely those are issues we can look at with the case management and the team of doctors and support staff at the center. That doctors do not see patients, that is not true, because actually they live on the compound with them, so there are doctors and health workers that are available 24/7.
A 49-year-old coronavirus patient we shall refer to as Joseph at the center says he has been in isolation for 7 days. Joseph says he was tested as required for people who want to travel from Juba to another state. He says he is not experiencing any COVID-19 symptoms, but has not received any counseling from medical staff.
It is yesterday that there are some individuals who are brought in who are actually some old age and maybe some have some difficulties in breathing or others. That we have seen doctors are actually busy with them through the night. But otherwise, we as a team who came before and up to yesterday, we just saw doctor when they brought lunch or the supper.
Joseph says the center is overcrowded and fears a patient like himself who recovers could be reinfected.
We are about 17 today, no, 16. And the accommodation that we are in the same room, 8 of us. And if we are sick, or one of us is sick, then the whole team is going to be affected. When you come here with not even the disease in you.
Joseph says he wants to be discharged so he can earn money again and take care of his family. Undersecretary Dr. Mathur says he understands some patients would like to leave, but says they will be released only when doctors confirm they have recovered from COVID-19 through a laboratory test.
Most of them will not show symptoms, about up to 80%, but they are actually sick and they can infect others. And as I said, some of them are isolated just to reduce the risk of passing infection to others. Others might have come in with symptoms, and over the course of the days they spend, They improved, they got well, but the virus may be still active.
That's why health officials require patients to stay for a full 2 weeks before they are discharged, said Mathur. 18 patients are in isolation at the John Garang Infectious Disease Unit, the current facility for treating COVID-19 patients in the country. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
The global COVID-19 pandemic continues to hit the United States very hard. More than 80,000 Americans have died, but through it all, healthcare workers have continued to work around the clock to stem the tide, usually at great risk to themselves. In the second part of our series of professional interviews with frontline healthcare workers, VOA's Adam Phillips spoke over Zoom with Dr. Rish Ratan, a critical care physician and trauma surgeon at Jackson Memorial Hospital in Miami, Florida, about the personal and professional challenges the pandemic poses for him.
We're at one of the busiest trauma centers in the country, so we're used to a busy workload, but the psychological effects have been very wearying, and coming to work is very much kind of like steeling yourself for battle. It's trying to get your head in order, trying to focus, trying to think about your team. It's almost like maybe also going through a pilot's checklist, thinking, okay, what is my plan if this happens? What is my plan if somebody with a gunshot wound to the chest comes in and spraying respiratory secretions and potentially virus all over the place, but is bleeding to death? Who am I going to send into battle, or who's going to join me in battle and put themselves at risk? And then the process of putting on our protective equipment and taking it off takes many, many minutes. Our trauma patients sometimes only have seconds to minutes to live. And so we sit outside knowing that we have the opportunity to save this patient's life, but that if we rush too fast to get on our protective equipment, we may expose ourselves. So there are very unique aspects to managing this pandemic that affects the way that we treat patients and affects the way that we interact with our team.
Give me an example of a once typical procedure that you performed that you might think about differently during the COVID era.
Well, normally when someone's heart stops in the ICU, we do CPR. What we do know is that the act of CPR is an extremely high-risk procedure for the team. What we're doing to the chest when we push on the chest to try to restart the heart, what the lungs feel is the equivalent of a cough, and a cough is how COVID is spread. So when a patient dies, sort of boils down to trying to choose whose life I'm trying to save. And it's a very unusual position, I think, for doctors to be in these days.
Decisions like that must be so wrenching.
Extremely, absolutely. And in addition, we know that part of the heart wrench of patients who have COVID is that they're alone in the hospital. Obviously, the nurses are at the bedside, and most nurses provide excellent comfort and bedside care. The doctors, we try to be there as well as much as we can, but it's different than having a family member at the bedside holding your hand, hearing their voice, and hearing them tell you that they love you. So a lot of those patients, I'm sure, feel very, very alone, as much as we try to do to prevent that. It goes against what we've been trained to do.
It must be especially difficult when you see your colleagues come down with the COVID-19. That's not too unusual these days.
Very hard to be really close to these colleagues and see all the things they've done and sacrifices they've made to help their patients now fall ill and be right next to their patients on life support, on a breathing machine, paralyzed. It really hurts. You think about their families or their children that you've met, and that they're at home scared without their parent. And then you realize that they got sick doing the same thing that you're doing. And you're wondering, will I get sick too? Will I be next to them on a breathing machine? Will I not be able to say goodbye to my family? Will I die alone? And it's hard to keep those thoughts out of your head. Did I do something today that's going to make me infected, that's going to have me end up being a patient in the ICU?
It must be so scary and disempowering to realize that your ability to help in so many cases is so limited, at least at this point.
Absolutely. Some of us are seeing more death in a shift than we've ever seen before in our lives. And so much of what we're telling each other is that we are not failures. This is not our fault that these patients are dying, that it's the disease's fault. You know, we are doing the best we can. But in addition, we know that our ability to manage our life is being wrested away from us by something that we don't fully understand. And all of us are scared. But I think that the larger disappointment for me and for many healthcare providers is feeling failed by our governments. But the other side of that coin has been the faith that's been restored in our communities, and to see how the people around us are coming together and crowdsourcing to support each other in the vacuum that our lack of leadership has left.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese community leaders in the diaspora complain about what they call land grabbing in South Sudan. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what image do you think your country has internationally?
My country internationally has a very good image based on its level of security, the gender involvement of women in decision making, and its cleanliness.
Internationally, my country, we are seen as a hospitable country and very friendly, and you know, a strong country to us all.
It is good because, okay, in other areas like the tourism side of it, the security side of it, let me say like the locally, like these days we don't have like political instabilities in the country.
My country, at the moment, I think it has one of the poorest image because look at the taxes my country is imposing.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Sex workers in Botswana, most of them migrants, received food donation from charities this week after reports that majority were facing starvation due to the coronavirus lockdown. A sex workers organization behind the initiative says it aims to help at least 800 migrant sex workers during the lockdown, especially those who are HIV positive or have young children. Mkondisi Dube reports from the capital, Gaborone.
More than 800 sex workers across Botswana will benefit from food hampers donated by non-governmental organizations this week. Two NGOs working with sex workers organization Sisonke are assisting with the handouts. Sex workers who are HIV positive and those with young children will be prioritized. Program manager Mandla Bule says the project aims to help migrant sex workers who do not have access to the government's coronavirus relief aid.
Our priority groups are sex workers, especially non-citizen sex workers, because under the Botswana social relief for COVID-19, only citizens are supported with food parcels. So we saw it fit that we target sex workers who are firstly HIV positive, to those with children, and who are foreigners.
Authorities in Botswana imposed a nationwide lockdown in March to stop the spread of the coronavirus. The country has recorded 24 cases of the virus and one death. Bule said restrictions in movement due to the lockdown have meant sex workers cannot meet their clients.
Sex workers are mostly affected because right now their work is mostly dependent on the movement of people. So under lockdown, there's no people, nobody's allowed to go anywhere. So in turn, they have lost on income.
Sex work remains illegal in Botswana, but an estimated 7,000 locals and migrants are involved in the trade. Botswana has begun easing its lockdown restrictions and full activities are expected to resume after May 21st. Mkondisi Dube for VOA News, Gaborone.
Cameroon's traditional healers say they are being overwhelmed by the number of people seeking herbal medicine for prevention or treatment of the coronavirus. The rush for traditional healing comes as the Central African nation confirms more than 2,500 cases of COVID-19 and 121 deaths. But medical doctors caution the use of herbal medicine for the coronavirus. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Traditional healer Dewa, who only uses a first name, says his chain of herbal medicine clinics across Cameroon have been flooded with patients since the March outbreak of the coronavirus. He spoke via a messaging application from the southwestern town of Kumba.
qui a plus de personnes qui font recours à nos services aujourd'hui.
Dewa says in the last 2 months, he has received at least 800 people from Cameroon, the Central African Republic, and Chad, who say they are rushing for African herbal medicine because they have been told there is no modern cure for COVID-19. The demand for herbal medicine is so high, says Dewa, that he could not treat some patients because he ran short of the potions made from plants he harvests from the forest. Despite a lack of scientific evidence, he claims the potions can treat all the symptoms of COVID-19 and even save the infected from death. Diane Sop, a traditional healer in Yaoundé, says in the last month, she too has received about 200 patients seeking treatment from the coronavirus.
Le traitement, il faut l'appliquer quand on est encore en début de maladie. Il est vraiment efficace.
Sop says on Tuesday morning alone, she received 10 patients, but had to send 4 away because she is still waiting for more herbal medicines. Medical researchers, doctors, and the Cameroon government have urged patients not to rely on traditional medicine for COVID-19 and to instead seek treatment at hospitals. Douala City pharmacist Marilyn Peyu notes many Cameroonians do not live near hospitals but have easy access to traditional medicine.
Il faut savoir que quand vous arrivez dans une pharmacie, vous avez beaucoup de médicaments.
She says many drugs sold in hospitals and pharmacies in Africa originate from herbs and tree leaves that were effectively used to treat Africans before the arrival of modern medicine. The only challenges of African herbal medicine, says Peyu, are that it is difficult to preserve, may become toxic, and healers don't always know what dosage to prescribe. Cameroon's Minister of Public Health released a statement Thursday warning of quacks, claiming they can treat COVID-19 to financially exploit people suffering from or worried about the virus. Gideon Pelego, a researcher on African traditional medicine, says authorities should work to identify which herbs can treat COVID-19 and help to develop a cure.
We need both financial and moral assistance. This is no time for us to keep on doubting what African traditional medicine can do. What interests us now the more is getting into rescuing the world population that is in suffering.
The World Health Organization notes the use of products to treat COVID-19 that have not been robustly investigated can put people in danger. In a May 4 statement, the WHO said untested and unproven medicines give a false sense of security and distract from proven measures such as hand washing and physical distancing. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Some South Sudanese community leaders in the diaspora have written a petition to President Salva Kiir about what they call land occupation in parts of eastern and central Equatorial states. Federico Vuni is the chairman of a South Sudanese community organization in the United Kingdom. Vuni says some pastoralists from Jonglei State have forcibly settled in villages in eastern Equatorial state.
The Magwe area and even the chief of Magwe has written personal letter to the president and also the MPs in the National Assembly. They have raised the issue in the assembly.
The leaders from various communities in Equatoria in the diaspora are adding their voice, but you're thousands of miles away. Someone would say, why don't you go to Juba and meet with President Kiir on this issue if it's persistent and it's not going away?
We are in touch with people on the ground, even within Juba and in the areas affected, we are communicating. You know, John, those people in Juba, they cannot speak because once you talk, you may disappear or anything can happen to you because those who are behind those cattle issues, they are much, much powerful.
I mean, there is a constitution in South Sudan. There is a law. Who is more powerful than the constitution and the law?
Well, Tanza, I think you know better than me that they don't give a damn to the constitution, especially the leaders there. It is applicable for the weak, but not for the powerful.
If you say there are people who are very powerful and they are behind these cattle that are destroying crops, why don't you name and shame those who are breaking the law?
Well, the cattle are specifically coming from Bor area. Sometimes ago, the Madi community, they have sent a letter. They went and met with the president. And it's obvious, those generals in Juba, they have their cattle. So they are moving there with all, not only the cattle herders, families are moving, displacing the indigenous people in the area.
This is not the first time we are covering these issues to do with conflict between pastoralists and farmers. Most of you who complain are shying off from mentioning names. If there is a general whose cattle is destroying crops in Magui County, why don't you mention the name of this general?
Let me put it in this way. Those armed people, those cattle herders, they're moving around with weapons which are supposed to be in the hands of the government. So the UDEM, for example, the Minister of Defense, the former minister, he was from Bor. How come the arms get in the hand of herders?
In a country like South Sudan, where there has been a lot of fighting, it will be unfair for you to point a finger at one person for supplying arms. What about the rebels? There are rebels all over.
Well, they are not coming with cattle to settle in other people's area, do they? Those rebels, they went to the bush not because of, they went there because of injustice that's happening. They want a change.
I'm talking about arms, the proliferation of small arms is all over South Sudan. Even in my village where we don't keep animals, there are weapons there. So if somebody misbehaves in my village in Maridi, and he's a civilian and he has a gun, it will be unfair to point fingers at the chief of staff to say he's the one supplying.
Yeah, our letter is quite clear. Our letter is a petition to the president to open his eyes that these things that's happening, it's not helping in peace building. If really we want peace, things like this happening, people fearing cattle from Bor, from Upper Nile, from Bahr Ghazal, to farmlands in Equatoria. It should not be happening.
Just a final question here, Mr. Federico Voni. How would you react to somebody who would say and ask you, a South Sudanese is supposed to live anywhere. Why should people live only in their areas?
Yeah, a South Sudanese can live anywhere, provided that you go and you respect the local community. There are systems in the local community. If today I choose to go and live in Bantio, for example, I will go there as an individual. I will follow the process which is in the land, and I will abide with the regulations there. But I don't go there with my own tribal chiefs.
That's Federico Voni, the chairman of South Sudanese Community Organization in the United Kingdom. He spoke with me via WhatsApp from London yesterday. That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Panyikwara Sudan Gang Pay by actually traditional group from Eastern Equatoria State. I am John Tanza. Thanks for listening to VOA's 93.6 FM in Juba and 107.5 FM in Nairobi. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing when you go out, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Papa, quite Mugoro Gangwa, Panyikwara wa.